These decks were the scene of bloodshed and death as the passengers of this ship tried to fight off Israeli soldiers from storming on board. By the time it was over, 9 passengers were dead and dozens more were seriously injured. 1 year on, the bridge still bears witness to the ferocity of the attack, scarred by bullets fired by Israeli soldiers as they burst in. In the aftermath of the attack on the Mavi Marmara, Israel began its second phase of operations. As part of a media war, it started to disseminate images and footage that supported its narrative of the story. This while passengers from this ship were taken to prison.
The organizers are well known for their ties to Global Jihad, Al-Qaeda and Hamas.
This group decided on confrontation. They decided on violence.
They had only one goal: to kill and lynch IDF soldiers.
We was on international water, and they came, your soldier came, with the bombs, helicopters, submarines. Half of the Israeli Navy was there against the civilians. And now you are asking us small sticks and knives.
These images dominated coverage of the flotilla in the aftermath of the attack. Released by the Israeli military, they contain helpful on-screen text instructing the viewers as to how they should interpret the footage. With all media materials seized by soldiers on board the ships, there was little else for the world's news networks to go on.
The first action that I saw a soldier do when they finally came into the salons was walk to the camera in the corner of the room and pull the cable out. They didn't want any of this to be recorded, broadcast, witnessed, shown to the world. And that's why you see our media in the UK saw these repeated images of just the Israeli military video of people in combat on the top of the ship. There were lots of other recordings made that evening, but perhaps they didn't portray what I went on in the same line of discourse that the Israelis were giving out.
They cut the communication with the phones, satellite phones, and also especially with the internet. But they failed in one thing: their electronic warfare. They failed to cut the live broadcast by the satellite. So there was a camera, there were several cameras who were broadcasting live the attack. Then, when they took over the ships, they take away from all of us, including journalists and all the people who were in the ships, all our footage, all our photographs, all our work, all our job.
The soldiers forcibly seized all of Press TV's footage and even destroyed our camera to get at a tape that remained inside.
When we were searched on board the ship, the soldiers snatched a tape out of my pocket on which we documented the entire attack. I'm an accredited member of the British press and I showed my press card and demanded the tape back. The response was to throw me down the stairs.
While the passengers were effectively silenced in prison for up to 3 days, Israel paraded its soldiers in front of the press.
We came in order to stop the boat peacefully and quietly, and we dealt with people who came to war, people who came to attack us, and not to defend themselves.
The Canadian government TV, they interviewed me from Istanbul. And the first words out of the mouth of the reporter from Canada was why did you attack the Israeli soldiers? That was the first question out of her mouth. I said, well, we didn't attack anybody. Where are you getting this from? Oh, we have film. We have film from the Israelis showing you, me, us, attacking the Israeli soldiers. And so that's crazy. You're believing the aggressor.
They asked me the same question when I came back, because what they'd seen, what the press had seen for 3 days was the Israeli media pumping out images of Israeli soldiers being beaten with, and then with sticks. But what they've never seen are the images of these Israeli soldiers shooting at point-blank range and killing and wounding. They haven't seen any of that because some people did take images of that. Some people were shooting images of that, but those images have been taken away, and Israel still has those images.
The joke of it is I took photos, and then I gave them to Ihaha. They released a couple of my photos, three of them, to the media. The Israelis have taken those photos, reprinted them in their media, and as a caption they say, Israeli soldier being tortured. And it was the exact moment when they were actually protecting that soldier from being killed. You know, it just turns it right on its head.
And we respect
Israeli officials singled out the Mavi Marmara for criticism, claiming that the passengers on the other five ships had walked off unharmed since they didn't put up the same kind of resistance.
As anyone knows, you have a right to self-defense, and that's all that, as I understand it, the soldiers were doing when they were coming down helicopters being attacked with iron bars and knives, and they didn't come with any intention to kill.
But a United Nations investigation found that when passengers on three of the other vessels used passive resistance by placing their bodies in the path of soldiers, they were attacked with stun grenades, plastic bullets and tasers, leaving a number of passengers injured with burns, bruises and fractures.
We were held at sea overnight, humiliated, roughed up, dragged from our ship, lost all our possessions, and then in prison treated with utter contempt.
1 year on, Press TV and other broadcasters are still unable to access their own footage. But Israel did give one broadcaster access to some of the material. The BBC didn't bother to send any of its crews on board the flotilla to provide coverage. But in the aftermath, it was given exclusive access to some of the soldiers who stormed the ships, a privilege not even granted to the United Nations during the course of its investigation. So how did the BBC portray events?
Self-defense or excessive force? What really happened that night?
BBC reporter Jane Corbyn sets the tone towards the start of the programme.
But did Israel fall into a trap? And what was the real agenda of some of those people who call themselves peace activists on board the Free Gaza flotilla?
The documentary purports to find out the truth about what happened, but its broadcast has led many, including some of those interviewed by Panorama, to question the real agenda of the BBC in covering the Middle East.
Militants have fired thousands of rockets at civilian targets in Israel in the past few years.
Little context is provided about the blockade, its impact, and the fact that Palestinians see themselves as fighting a war of resistance against an occupier. Rockets fired from Gaza have killed dozens of Israelis in the past decade, but the number of Palestinians killed in Gaza during the same period through Israeli military attacks runs into the thousands, and this isn't mentioned. Jane Corbyn sets about investigating what happened on board the ship through the examination of footage and interviews. But why did the BBC feel the need to add credibility to a controversial and disputed audio recording released by Israel by dubbing it over another recording?
The radio response from the flotilla. Part of it was defiant and abusive.
Shut up! Go back to Auschwitz!
We're helping Arabs going against the US. Don't forget 9/11, guys.
Here's the original video as released by the Israeli military.
You arrived.
Negative.
Our destination is Gaza.
On the Mavi Marmara that night, at least one man openly boasted he'd be prepared to die as a shaheed, a martyr, fighting the Israelis.
If the Israelis dare and try to fight us, we're going to give them a real good fight. But if I die as a shaheed, I just want to tell my children, my wife, that I love them a lot. Their father died for a really good cause.
I think the Israelis want to show people that I'm a terrorist. I grew up in Israel. Most of my friends were Israelis, and they know who I am. Always like to help. And if I had to die to protect the ship and to protect the old people, the young people there, I will do it. I want to protect my ship exactly the same I'm protecting my house. All what I did, I went to save people's lives. And that's shaheed. That's what shaheed for in Islam, what shaheed means. Because I know what I'm doing is going to save people, going to give people medicine. To attack me, I have to defend myself.
Time and time again, BBC Panorama asked whether the Mavi Marmara passengers' actions
could lead to confrontation.
Or were...
not a provocation.
But both sides didn't face the same level of scrutiny. The Israeli military wasn't asked if it was a provocation to throw stun grenades onto the deck of the ship in the first few minutes of the interception.
We think that no one can that much crazy against the peoples on international water.
The IHH says it stands by those passengers who chose to resist.
We was on international water. We didn't carry anything, special weapons against the Israelis, but when they came to our boat, they came to my home. When they came, of course I need to defend myself. It was my right. We believe that if we resist, they will not come. But they came and they have killed.
And I've yet to meet anyone from the near 600 passengers who feels differently.
If we hadn't been intercepted, there would not have been a confrontation. That's the bottom line. I wanted us to resist being taken over. I felt the mission was very, very precious. What can you do in that situation? Are you allowed to defend yourself? Because that's what they were doing. They were trying to defend us and defend the ship.
Panorama repeatedly questioned the motives of the aid workers and activists, but failed to question the motives of the Israeli military in using lethal force to storm a civilian ship. In her exclusive interviews with some of the soldiers, Jane Corbin listens as they detail the extent of their injuries.
I looked down at my abdomen and saw it was a knife, and I pulled it out. The beating was continuous, and the cries of Allah Akbar.
But there's little comment on the deaths of the 9 Turkish civilians. One would expect, when trying to establish the facts of what took place, that the forensic evidence would take precedence.
The autopsies, published in the British press a month before the BBC aired its documentary, show that some of the victims were shot up to 6 times, including several who were shot in the face and head. They present a key challenge to Israel's claims that its soldiers only fired in self-defense. But they are completely ignored by BBC Panorama.
Israel held onto the Mavi Marmara for months following the attack, but some signs of the bloodshed still remain.
Markers now stand where the 9 men are thought to have fallen. The UN investigation has provided detailed findings into their deaths based on forensic evidence and eyewitness testimony, although supporters of Israel dismiss the investigation as biased. The autopsies show that many of the dead were shot in the head and upper body.
38-year-old Chevdet Kalichla, a photographer, was killed while attempting to take pictures of Israeli soldiers on the deck above. He was shot in the forehead between the eyes. 6-year-old Ibrahim Bilgin received a wound in the chest consistent with being shot from the helicopter above. He received 2 more bullet wounds when he was shot from behind and was then shot at close range in the side of the head with a beanbag round that penetrated his skull and lodged itself in his brain. 42-year-old Fahri Yaldiz was shot 5 times in the chest and legs. 1 bullet hit his heart and lungs, causing rapid death. 38-year-old Ali Haider Bengi was shot 6 times. Several eyewitnesses claim some of the shots were fired at close range while he was lying wounded on the deck. 41-year-old Cengiz Aykuz was shot in the back of the head and in the face, and 46-year-old Cengiz Songur was shot in the neck. Both were shot at from above as they were sheltering from the firing and attempting to move inside. 54-year-old Chetin Topçu Olu had been helping to bring injured passengers inside. He was shot 3 times in the head, groin and lower back. 31-year-old Necdet Yildirim was shot in the shoulder and back. And 19-year-old Furkan Dogan, a dual Turkish and US national, was killed after being shot 5 times. He'd been filming with a small video camera.
Forensic analysis shows that one of the shots, aimed at his face, was delivered at point-blank range while he was lying on the floor, already wounded.
The UN investigation describes at least six of these deaths as summary executions. The nine men were shot a total of 30 times. Five of them were shot in the head. A tenth man, 46-year-old Uğur Süleyman Soylemez, remains in a coma after having also been shot in the head. BBC Panorama skims over the nine deaths. There's no reference to the findings of the autopsies and no reference to the important fact that Israeli soldiers continued firing after the passengers had raised a white flag. Instead, it focuses on the testimony of the Israeli soldiers.
Do you know if you killed anybody or injured anyone?
I don't know. I think that I probably injured people because I shot them in the legs.
Israel's own investigation concluded that Israeli forces acted lawfully and in self-defense.
There were elements on that boat who went with thoughts of causing possible bloodshed, and unfortunately they're the ones that came out, they were the ones who didn't survive.
If I wanted to give my life for the Palestinian cause, I wouldn't go unarmed on a civilian ship with humanitarian aid, you know, with medicine and building materials to travel, you know, to the Gaza Strip and then confront fully armed Israeli commandos.
We carried humanitarian aid. We did not go to fight. We had no such intention. If we wanted, we could have shot at them with the couple of guns we got hold of on the deck during the fighting. But we didn't use them to kill. Instead, we threw them overboard. The Israeli military says its soldiers were only armed with pistols for use in self-defense, a claim repeated by BBC reporter Jane Corbin. In doing so, she ignores this widely available video evidence of soldiers using rifles on the roof. Turkish investigators believe this is the moment when wounded Furkan Doğan was killed. Passengers on the ship have claimed that live ammunition was being fired at them from inside the helicopters, but Panorama accepted an irrelevant Israeli explanation.
The Israelis say it's not possible to fire while abseiling from a helicopter.
We have a very clear evidence that at least in four cases, the other side did use live fire. In some of them, they did use the Israeli weapons that was stolen from our soldiers, but at least in one case, they did use their weapon, because we found bullets and shells of weapons that is not in use in the Israeli forces.
But there's no examination of this evidence. The Turkish autopsy reports indicate the use of a hunting rifle by an Israeli soldier with unusual ammunition. But again, this information isn't deemed worthy of Panorama viewers. Israel refused to allow the UN's international fact-finding mission to examine the medical records of the soldiers it claims were shot by activists. This Israeli military video inadvertently shows passengers throwing objects overboard, potentially corroborating claims that the confiscated weapons weren't used.
If really any of them had a bullet in him, it's from each other, fighting each other, because they were panicking, they were shooting like crazy. And why I don't believe that as well, because when they came with helmets, they came with their face covered, came with bulletproof jackets, they came ready to shoot, ready to kill. So, no, we didn't have guns, we didn't shoot them, it's all a lie. It's all lies.
The BBC started that program. The whole production was geared around, let's turn this into something that it's not. Let's make it look like the Israelis were simply trying to defend themselves.
Ken O'Keefe, who was interviewed for the program, claims his views weren't fairly represented.
They blatantly lied and said that the commandos that we had disarmed and controlled completely, that they escaped effectively.
Me and another soldier found ourselves alone and we just jumped off the bow into the water.
All three Israeli commandos were rescued.
That's a lie, and it's an intentional lie, because the BBC portrayal of the events was a portrayal of us insinuating that we're terrorists or we're killers and things like this, and that the Israelis were simply defending themselves.
Personally, myself, have arranged everything and we have released the soldiers. Otherwise, it was impossible to them to come inside and take the soldiers. You remember, even after 3 hours, they couldn't come inside.
There are many further omissions in the BBC programme which serve to skew it in favour of Israel. It discusses the efforts of the flotilla to harness the media to serve its cause, but ignores the Israeli military's efforts to manipulate coverage of the incident by seizing all journalistic materials on board the ships.
So what about the aid the IHH said was the reason for their mission? I found that two-thirds of the medicines are out of date and useless.
The fact that this is only a tiny proportion of the total sum of aid on the ships, and that most of that aid hasn't been allowed through, isn't explained. Neither is the fact that studies have shown many drugs are still effective years after their expiry dates and are not useless. That aside, the IHH denies it sent expired medicine.
These medicines are not the Turkish. Some other NGOs maybe bring the medicines to Israel for a long time before, and they didn't allow, and now they are showing all these medicines as expired medicines. All the single medicines have been listed and checked by the Turkish custom officers.
The IHH says the Turkish Health Ministry has strict regulations in place preventing them from exporting expired medicines. They say they rotate the distribution of drugs between their projects around the world, leaving nothing in storage for extended periods. In the beginning of 2011, the charity spent $3.2 million purchasing medical and humanitarian supplies for just one of its aid shipments to the people of Libya. But more generally, the IHH has been accused by Israel of having links to terrorism, an allegation repeated by BBC Panorama.
Openly, we are asking them, if there is any proofs in your hand, 7 months passed, and you didn't say anything to vote. But now you have said, and from the beginning to now, we are asking the peoples, if you want to know IHH, come us, see us, it is very transparent. Or you can go the region where we are working, and you can ask the people from the street, who is IHH? What they have done in that region? They have linked with terrorism, or they have linked with orphans, widows, hospitals, infrastructures. After 18 years, we have reached many places in the world. In this year, we have projects in 126 countries. And whatever and wherever, no problem. There is no any discrimination between the peoples and the places. Of course, we have some relation with the Hamas on Gaza, as much as United Nations have, as much as the Western NGOs have.
We put the points made in this program and many more questions of bias and omissions in Panorama's coverage to the BBC. This is the full response we received.
We stand by the program's investigation into what happened on the Mavi Marmara. The BBC has a long and established reputation for editorial independence, and it rejects any accusation that the report was not impartial. We also note with interest that Panorama asked Press TV for an interview for this film so that it could put forward its view of what happened, but the request was declined.
It's true, BBC Panorama did contact me to arrange a meeting while they were filming, and I made a personal decision to turn them down. Given that Ken O'Keefe and some of the others feel they were misrepresented by the programme, I think I probably made the right decision.
And the BBC is just one of several Western mainstream media institutions that stands accused of failing to report the story fairly.
I saw evidence of executions. I saw the bodies with the bullet holes in their heads. So I reported that when I got back. Right after I reported that, no more interviews. He simply stopped talking to me.
Şehitlerimiz silahlı değildi.
Our martyrs were not armed. Their only aim was to make the cargo of humanitarian aid reach the people of Gaza. Dear friends, I have very mixed feelings. I have just seen where my son fell as a martyr on the highest part of the ship. What shall I say about Furkan? Furkan spent his life helping, sharing other people's problems. He would always put others in front of himself. America, Furkan was your citizen. When there's a human rights report by the UN documenting his death, you shamelessly voted against it. How is it that you allowed American weapons to be used against your own citizen? Your mask of human rights has fallen. and your real face has been revealed. He is a Muslim. He is an American citizen. You didn't like that, did you? Didn't you say there was no difference between different races and colors? Obama, didn't you become president with those words? 95% of Americans are oblivious to what happened to Furqan because there is a news blackout.
If they let that border be open, then Gaza is free. And they can't, and they won't let that happen. They want the Palestinians to give up. They want the Palestinians to surrender. And they're not going to surrender. But we'll wait and see what to do this time. We'll wait and see what to do this time. But I think they'll try to do the same thing again. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think they're going to try and stop us again, and we'll have to go again. Like I say, we sail until Palestine is free.